And welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Claire Wiley, and joining me now is Steve Slater, who is a conservation science director for Hawkwatch International. Steve, thank you so much for being a part of This Green Earth.
Yeah, happy to be here.
Well, Steve, February is primetime viewing for bald eagles here in Utah. They migrate here in the hundreds for food and maybe a little bit milder weather. But first, before all of that, I want to learn a little bit more about you and Hawkwatch International.
So I have been with Hawkwatch now for almost 20 years, and I started, you know, as a young person, just really interested in the outdoors and wildlife in general. And birds became a passion of mine at a very young age. And just like a lot of people do now, I was really interested in bird watching and decided to go to college for wildlife biology and spent quite a bit of time doing that in Michigan, where I grew up, and then in Wyoming, where I got my master's and PhD before I came to Hawkwatch, which was an organization that was really attractive to me just because of its conservation focus, where we focus on birds of prey, all the different raptors, hawks, owls, eagles, and so on. And we also have education birds that we use to teach the public about these birds of prey. And we actually have a bald eagle and a golden eagle, both of which have come to us through injuries. And yeah, just our mission overall is to help people understand the importance of raptors and to conserve our shared environment.
Well, as a Michigander myself, I understand the draw to the natural world, having grown up in Michigan, especially with the richness of birds that we do have in that state with all of the water. So I'm curious, as a child, if you're growing up in Michigan, what were some of the birds that intrigued you first as a child, and where would you go to get out into the natural world?
Yeah, so I grew up in Western Michigan, so on Lake Michigan itself. So as you mentioned, the water and all the different wetlands, so just great, great birding in the state. And so the bald eagle was actually a species that was very interesting to me. We don't have golden eagles very commonly out east, but the bald eagle just being one of the biggest birds you can see. And they were going through the recovery as I was growing up. Bald eagles were at very low numbers in the 70s and started to rebound in the 80s and 90s with protection under the Endangered Species Act. And so there's definitely some areas where I grew up along some of the lakes where you could see nesting bald eagles, including the house where my mom still lives today. Mm. And so those were one of the species that just really had a big impact on me. It's just such a large bird and just such a striking bird.
Getting into their habitats now and what drives them maybe here to Utah, where are they commonly found and what different times of year can you track their migration?
So bald eagles occur throughout North America year round, and then there are places where they're only found during the nesting season. For example, up in Canada and northern Alaska, they'll breed in those areas. Mm. But then, as you mentioned early on, once it gets too cold and a lot of the water's frozen over, those birds will migrate out. And so then we have birds that nest here in Utah, but then we'll get an influx of, you know, a couple thousand birds in the wintertime for birds that are coming down to areas where there's still some open water. Bald eagles are somewhat famous for being very opportunistic birds. So not only can they, you know, take fish and other things, but they also will scavenge on roadkill, for example, or dead deer. They have a bit of a reputation for stealing food from other raptors. And so they come down to these, you know, latitudes like where we are in Utah, where there are deer that overwinter that die off that they can feed on, or deer that get struck by cars, as well as open water along reservoirs and other places where they can still find fish. So yeah, we have bald eagles here in Utah year round, but there's probably only, we don't know exactly, but there's probably only a few dozen nesting pairs in the state as a whole. We never had a lot of bald eagles nesting here in Utah just because we're a drier western state. Mm-hmm. There's a lot more breeding, you know, in the eastern states and so on, the Great Lakes and those places like that. But we do host as you mentioned, a very robust winter population of both bald and golden eagles. We have a similar effect with the golden eagles where we have birds nesting here year round, but then we have an influx of wintering birds.
Right. And so generally, this happens in late January, early February. When they do come here, is that when they're maybe eating more of those rodents? Or you said they're opportunistic. Maybe are they taking kill from another bird or another animal?
So here in winter, they do find still availability of fish just because we humans have modified the environment pretty extensively, especially in the United States. And so we actually have a lot more water now in Utah because of all the different reservoirs that have been built, the dams and impoundments. And there's also now invasive carp, which aren't highly desired necessarily from by fishermen, but they're in a lot of our waterways. And so those will, there'll be die-offs of those in the winter, and those are somewhat available where the water is still open. So that attracts the eagles here. But a research project that we're involved in that we've been doing now for about 8 years is what we call an Eagle Vehicle Strike Project, our EVS project. And it's focused on both bald and golden eagles. Both species really feed on roadkill a lot in winter. Deer and elk and other big game have always died a lot more disproportionately in the wintertime because it's a hard time of year for big game animals to find food. And humans, again, with our roads and our traffic, and we've shifted the mortality from animals starving from deep snow and other things to being hit by cars in the wintertime. And the eagles have adapted to that. And so we have a project where we actually have teams of people who go out in the wintertime, exactly the months you were talking about, January, February, and extending into March, where we patrol roads where there's a lot of roadkill, and we find dead deer and elk, and we move them to what we call eagle safe distances. And so if a deer's laying a few feet off the road and an eagle's feeding on it and a car comes by, it might flush, and it's such a big animal, it can't really fly away quickly. And so they can get struck secondarily. And so what we've learned is that if you can move that deer or elk or other thing 40 feet or more from the side of the road, then the eagles won't feel threatened by the car passing. And so they can take advantage of the food resource and not be at risk of being struck. So it's a combination of factors that have really changed, where maybe 100 years ago, you wouldn't have seen the same number of bald eagles here in the winter, just with the changes with the reservoirs and things like carp, and now with the roadkill and so on, we do have some fairly robust populations of eagles in the wintertime.
So interesting when you're talking about them getting into the roadways, scavenging these deer carcasses or what is on the road, and they're a little bit slow, like you said, to fly away. Are they ever just coming down and carrying pieces off? Like, how much can they carry in their talons, and how much weight is it safe for them to pick up and fly away with and to get it to a place that's
Yeah.
safer for them to eat?
Right. So they're very, both bald and golden eagles are very large birds. They can be similar sizes, depending on, if they're more northern eagles, but they can easily be, a 10-pound bird with a 7-foot wingspan, either species. So they can take very large items. We do other work with golden eagles where we put cameras, these motion sensitive cameras in nests of the eagles, and we can see what prey they're eating, and they can bring in very large things like marmots, sometimes badgers or deer fawns. They can easily take 20-pound or more items up into their nest. And bald eagles can carry off a rabbit, a large jackrabbit or something like that off the road as well. We still often move many of those items as part of our roadkill relocation project.
And how often do they need to eat? What, how much do they need to consume to continue to be viable?
Yeah, so the eagles themselves are, again, as I mentioned, they can easily be 10 pounds, 12 pounds. So, like a lot of predators, they can go weeks sometimes without eating. That's not ideal for them, but they certainly go many days without eating quite regularly. It's somewhat for predators, they often live in a feast and famine kind of environment. Again, we'll put out cameras on roadkill to understand their behavior there. And an eagle might show up and gorge for half a day, 5 or 6 hours, and you can see its large crop, and it can put on many pounds, or it can take in many pounds of biomass during that feeding event. And that's when it's really at risk, because it's hard for, it's like after Thanksgiving, it's hard for that eagle to fly off if now a semi comes barreling
The
past at 60
mobility
miles an hour.
changes,
So yes, they're pretty vulnerable after that time. They spend a lot of time just resting for the next few days, and so that's kind of their pattern. They'll eat we talk more in kilograms, but they can eat a few kilograms of prey at a time and then not eat for a few days and just take it easy. And they spend a lot of time in the winter call doing what's called roosting. And that's where the viewing is really interesting because we'll have, some of the cottonwoods, say below Echo Reservoir or near Jordan Elb on the Provo River, you might see, if you're lucky, a half dozen bald eagles all in one tree, just roosting in the wintertime. So yeah, they can be fairly inactive in the winter and they go through these feasts and famine. And then most of these eagles, especially the adults, are in February and March. They're really trying to put on some mass and be in good shape for the beginning of the nesting season, which can be start as early as March, or even February. And so there's a lot of research just showing the condition of how much nutrition and feeding they're able to do in the winter really relates to whether or not they can lay eggs and pull off a nesting. And then once they have young, that's when the demands on eagles is really intense, where, they're not just feeding themselves, but they have to bring in a lot of biomass once they have nestlings every day to really grow these young eagles.
Sure, let's talk about their nesting patterns, what their nests look like. And I heard that they mate for life, which I think is endearing for most people to hear about a species of animals. Is
Sure.
that correct?
Well, we believe it's true for most eagle species and in most long-lived raptors. I mean, these larger birds, they don't achieve sexual maturity. So they don't generally start to lay eggs and have young until their fourth or fifth year at the earliest. Often it's even later, just depending on, the territories that are available and so on. And so it's a long-term investment and they don't have a lot of, they only have 1 to 3 eggs a year. And again, they don't lay eggs every year, depending on the conditions. And so it makes a lot of ecological sense to have a mate that you stick with. It's a lot of work to keep trying to figure out where to find food in your territory with a different individual. And so from the perspective of these large raptors, most of them do appear to have pair bonds that are lifelong until one of the pair members dies, and then they will take on a new mate. But yeah, that generally seems to be true with the larger raptors, that they have pair bonds that last until one of the pair disappears from the territory.
So, if you've got this eagle pair and then you have these eggs coming in, how large is that nest going to need to be? And also, how does that male-female dynamic work with the eggs? Is there nesting on both parts, or how does that work?
Yeah, so both the bald and golden eagle nests can be very large. They're very noticeable. If you see one of these stick nests in a cottonwood or a golden eagles are more on cliffs where we are, but we do a lot of work with the golden eagles and we rappel down to, again, put cameras to see how they're feeding and we will band and put tracking devices on the eagles occasionally. And, I can walk around in one of these nests. I could lie down in
Oh
one
my
of these
gosh,
golden eagle nests.
really?
They're very large,
Wow.
and the bald eagle nests are similarly very, very large. That's why you'll really only see them in the biggest cottonwood trees, or sometimes in pine trees further west. There was a famous pair this last year in Bear Lake in California that had live video footage, and you could get a sense of how large the nest was there. But yeah, they're really big nests. And then, as far as the nesting itself, for both bald and golden eagles, and a lot of raptors in general, the female does the majority of the incubating, but they do nest switching. And so, the female will have to go out and the male will often bring food to the female while she's incubating the eggs, but they will do nest switching where the male will come and incubate the eggs as well, while the female can take a break and stretch her wings and feed as well. And then often it seems from our research, again, with cameras and nests and being able to recognize individuals, the female will spend more of the time once they hatch to kind of guarding the nestling and help feeding it while the male does a lot of the provisioning. And interestingly, in both eagle species, the female is quite a bit larger than the male. It's called sexual dimorphism. There's a lot of different theories as to why that is, but one really good advantage of being larger as a female, you can defend the nest from potential threats and you can have a large egg in your body and support that. And while the male can be really maneuverable and hunt some smaller prey and have a lower food demand while he's bringing in food for the female and nestling. So that's just one of the hypotheses we have about why we see how they split up the nesting duties and why they have these different sizes in the males and females.
Yeah, now they're obviously, we talked about these large birds. What does that biology look like as far as their weight of actual body mass to feathers? Like, how much do their feathers weigh?
So it's mostly their musculature. I mean, the eagle and all birds, but eagles especially, since we're talking about the species, have a number of adaptations to be a really big animal that wants to be able to fly as well. And so birds have these hollow bones, and they basically, our bones are solid and have marrow inside, but bird bones will have a lot of perforations in them. Basically, it's like lattice work. They have the structure of a bone, but they reduce the weight by having all these holes in the bones. So they're doing everything they can to be as light as possible. And the feathers weigh very little as well. And so most of their mass is their musculature. And you can even see that with the nestlings. We'll weigh them when we're doing our research work. And they're putting on, mass pretty regularly as they're growing and leave the nest. But as they begin to fly, that's when they're developing their musculature and need to put on mass to be able to, sustain flight and other things. And so for the most part, eagles, if you see them as a nestling before they get all their primary feathers and their outer dark feathers, and they're just these kind of white poof balls, they seem to be like all legs and talons. They use their feet to seize and kill prey. That's basically a major definition of what a raptor is. And so when they're born, they seem to be half legs and talons. And so that's kind of the build of an eagle in general, just to really support the way they live their lives.
And their eyesight is incredible. Tell me about that.
So those are the kind of the three things we talk about for raptors, the feet and the talons being able to, seize and kill their food, the eyesight, as you just mentioned. So having really keen eyesight where they can pick up on items while they're, soaring hundreds of yards above the ground, and they can see movement really well. And they have basically, compared to our vision, they have binocular vision where they can see, like a rabbit from a half mile away moving while they're sitting up on a power pole or a tree. And so their eyesight is really well developed. And they have this membrane that you may have seen. If people who've seen pictures of raptors, it's called a nictitating membrane. It's like a little clear eyelid that can go over their eyes to protect when they go down to,
Oh, yeah.
capture something like in the shrubs and the sagebrush. They might crash into the ground to, capture a rabbit. So their eyes help them make their living. And so they have this membrane that will come down where they can still see the light coming through and still function, but it protects their very sensitive eyes from getting scratched or damaged. And so that sense that being such a key part of their making a living. The third characteristic, of course, is their beak or their bill, which is designed for tearing flesh. And so, yeah, you've kind of hit on the key characteristics that we use to define what makes a raptor.
So, specifically speaking about eagles and bald eagles, when we talked about some of the mortality issues, we're talking about even human conflict with these beautiful creatures on the roads. What are some of the other threats that are out there for bald or golden eagles?
Unfortunately, it's very similar for both species, and it's predominantly human causes. So the vehicle collisions is a big deal. They also collide with wires. Just being such a large-bodied raptor, collisions is a problem for them. Unfortunately, shooting is still a big deal. A lot of people like to think or would assume that that is not a big deal anymore. That was a problem from, 50 years ago, but all raptors continue to be shot at really unfortunately high rates. And we're not really sure why. There's a lot of different speculation about why that is. It seems to happen almost opportunistically on, for example, in the West where we live, out on public lands, people will go out to do recreational shooting, and raptors obviously make a very large target when they're sitting on a power line or a power pole or a fence. And from my perspective, I think a lot of it is just convenience and just not being informed. But historically, there was a lot of shooting, and some of that still continues on just because of perceptions that both bald and golden eagles are competing with us. There are fishermen who see bald
Oh,
eagles taking
yes.
fish out of the same reservoir they're in. There are ranchers who see golden eagles that are flying above their sheep. And so there's a perception of the threat from these species, which are those threats to those livelihoods are fairly minimal. They do take fish, and they do can take lambs and so on, but very small portion of their diets. And there are other means to help dissuade those types of behaviors where they're a conflict. And then, unfortunately, for both species, there's somewhat of a black market as well for feathers and parts. So those are kind of related to shooting. But then, yeah, there's lead poisoning for both species, especially bald eagles, is still a major concern. And that's because they feed on, waterfowl and fish, and we're still using lead sinkers and weights in a lot of our fishing tackle. And so those accumulate in reservoirs, and then they get ingested by fish, and then the fish get eaten by the eagle, and that's called bioaccumulation. So those are just a few of them. There's a number of similar human threats like that.
So, what type of protections do they have? Like you said, when I was a kid, there was a lot of conservation efforts and protections for the bald eagle. What exists for them now?
So they're both protected by what's called the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act, or what we call BEGIPA. So it is illegal to shoot or harass or possess bald or golden eagles, and there's pretty steep fines. I think it's $100,000 these days if you're convicted of a crime of, intentionally shooting an eagle. So there's pretty steep penalties. Unfortunately, the conservation world has this issue with. We have policies and regulations, and the conservation world in general, this is my perspective, is immensely underfunded. And so, for example, here in Utah, we only have a handful of law enforcement officers that specifically deal with these types of issues. And so they're spread across the entire state, and they've got to deal with poaching of deer and elk and other things. And so it's really hard when most of these issues are happening in really remote areas. Unfortunately, a lot of it goes undetected or unprosecuted. And so they do have those protections. They also have protections around their nests, which I think some of those protections are more successful. It's illegal to disturb the nesting of either eagle species. And so there's a lot of guidance for if you're trying to develop a piece of property and you have a bald eagle nesting on your property, ways to provide a buffer around those nests and protect those nests from disturbance and so on.
Yeah, speaking of that, what about loss of habitat? What does that affect on the birds?
So both species have slightly different relationships with that. As I mentioned, I think bald eagles, they may be nesting in the state more commonly than they did pre-humans just because of the water developments that we've created. We have had issues in, over the past few decades where there'll be a well-known nest or roost tree, in a cottonwood along some private property, and somebody will unintentionally cut down a tree. And so you do lose, nest trees here and there. But in general, bald eagles, nesting numbers are increasing in the state, which is great news. They're a real success story for the Endangered Species Act. They went from very low numbers in the 70s to very robust numbers now. I think the most recent estimate is over 350,000 bald eagles in the United States.
Well, that's
Golden eagles,
hopeful.
yeah,
That's good to
that's very
hear.
hopeful. It's considered probably one of the best conservation success stories of the United States. Just those changes. If you don't know the whole story, DDT, which this pesticide that we were using widespread in the leading up to its ban in the 70s, when we discovered that a lot of bird species were really doing poorly because of how it was impacting both their physiology, but their eggshells were really thin. And so when they would even like just try to incubate, the eggs would just break. And so banning that pesticide really allowed these species that were more aquatic species, where it was really entering the food chain for them, to recover. And so the bald eagle is doing wonderfully as far as its population numbers. Part of the reason my work focuses more on golden eagles is they're a little bit different story. Their entire US estimate is maybe around 50,000 birds, so a lot lower, and predominantly in pretty remote Western habitats, and require really large areas in these arid environments to find food. We've seen a lot of the issues that we're facing with golden eagles and population declines is mostly habitat driven. So they mostly live out in places like what we call the West Desert in Utah, where you've historically had shrub habitats supporting jackrabbits, their preferred food. And we've seen a lot of fire and cheatgrass and invasive species kind of change the fire cycle. And we've burnt out a lot of the shrub habitat, which has resulted in the decline in their preferred prey. And so for golden eagles, it's a major issue, just the habitat change we're seeing on a lot of the rangelands across the West.
Well, everything plays a role in the natural world. What roles do eagles play in ecosystems that are positive when they arrive and when they're there?
Yeah, definitely. We would talk about something called ecosystem services for wildlife in general, but raptors, I think it's very appropriate to talk about that. So these are services that wildlife or habitat provides to humans that we put a value on, but maybe isn't quantified specifically for an eagle. But golden eagles, they prey on a number of things that we consider pests, and so do all raptors. So jackrabbits can, jackrabbits go through these incredible cycles, and there's historic articles about back in the early 1900s when you would have these incredibly high numbers of jackrabbits where they could just destroy rangeland and compete with ranchers and really just be a nuisance. And so they provide a lot of pest control for humans through the consumption of everything from rodents up through larger mammals. And then, as I mentioned, feeding on carcasses in the winter, all the scavenging species provide a huge benefit to us. There are countries like in India and other places where a lot of the scavengers have been killed off, unfortunately, through poisoning and other things. And you see disease spread and things like wild dogs and all kinds of other things that become major issues without having these scavenger cleanup crews that play a huge role. And so eagles play an important role in that. And, I think for me, it's really important just the iconic nature of these top predators and knowing that we have a landscape that still has the right pieces present that you can have bald and golden eagles living in that landscape. When we lose the things that support golden eagles, that's why we use raptors as an indicator for us of what the health of the environment is. Because if you have a landscape that's supporting nesting eagles, then you have some of the right elements there. And when they disappear, you don't. And so for me, that's really the way I look at the value of them as kind of a bellwether of how we're doing out there and that we still have intact landscapes.
Well, Steve Slater from Hawkwatch International Conservationists, we appreciate you so much giving us a little bit of an overview about these beautiful raptors. If people want to learn more about the bald or golden eagles or their conservation, do you have a website that they can go to?
Sure. So our website is hawkwatch.org, and we have fact sheets about different species and links to other resources.
Thank you so much again, Steve Slater, for coming on This Green Earth. We sure do appreciate you.
Thanks for having me.